Welcome to ProBioDrug's conference call. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I will now hand you over to Ulrich Dauer, who will start today's conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon and good morning, respectively. We'd like to welcome everybody to ProBioDrug's 2018 half-year result conference call. With me on the phone today is my colleague, Inge Lues. We both will walk you through the presentation, which hopefully everybody could download from our webpage, and we are certainly prepared to take your questions afterwards. I'm turning over to slide two, and as you're used to, here we ask you to apply appropriate care when interpreting our forward-looking statements. Slide number three, and here is what we've got for you today. We want to give a brief introduction to ProBioDrug and its relevant markets for those of you who are new to our story. We'll then talk about the results and highlights of the first half of our business year 2018 before we take your questions. Slide number four. Now, I've always been intrigued by the history of ProBioDrug, which is a role model of what I believe biotechnology should be about, which is translating scientific excellence into first-in-class product candidates and eventually commercial success. This was achieved by ProBioDrug with its first project in diabetes on DPP-4 inhibitors, which led to new products called gliptins, a new class of now well-established diabetic drugs. The scientific founders, Uli Demuth and Conrad Lund, with their team, were spearheading the development of this successful new class of compounds. In 2004, ProBioDrug sold their diabetes franchise to OSI, allowing for a profit distribution to their shareholders and the opportunity to start with a novel approach to the treatment of Alzheimer's disease. In June last year, this novel and differentiated approach showed highly promising data in a first-in-man trial called SAPPHIRE, which in only 3 months achieved statistical significance in various endpoints, including even a cognitive parameter. Slide number five. Clearly, our mission at ProBioDrug has been to develop a novel therapeutic approach to a disease-modifying treatment for Alzheimer's disease, which makes a true difference for patients. We're building on a broad and robust base of scientific data in our efforts to advancing our lead candidate, PQ912, into a phase IIb program. Obviously, there's no need to educate you on the high medical need for new disease-modifying therapeutic approaches in Alzheimer's disease and the enormous commercial potential of such a drug. The challenge, though, is that a series of late-stage programs failed, like this year already three BACE inhibitor programs, which underlines the specific development risk in this particular disease. On the other hand, there's again excitement and extensive discussions on new clinical data like the ICI-BEN-2401 antibody or early successes of Biogen's aducanumab, which has suggested to add robustness to the so-called A-beta hypothesis. To this end, Inge will give some cross-reading of this data and our interpretation of their relevance for PQ912 development. Slide six. We'll now move on to the results of the first half year of 2018 with the highlights in the reporting period. Slide seven. In February 2018, ProBioDrug, together with the Alzheimer's Disease Cooperative Study Group, ADCS, led by Howard Feldman, applied for a grant to co-fund a planned phase IIb study of PQ912 in the U.S. The ADCS is a collaboration between the National Institute on Aging and the University of San Diego, California, with the mission to progress novel approaches in Alzheimer's disease into clinical proof of concept. The ADCS, after a thorough assessment, took on our project into their pipeline. In March, ProBioDrug presented its new treatment concept based on QC inhibition at the ACS meeting in New Orleans. In April, with the annual report presentation for 2017, Inge introduced cornerstones of our phase IIb study plan for PQ912. In the same month, changes to the management team and my appointment as CEO was announced. In May, a scientific publication in a peer review journal on the positioning of our pGlu A-beta antibody was published. In June, we took important resolutions at our AGM. As to our financials, the expenditures are in line with the management expectations and result in a cash position end of the reporting period of 6.7 million euros. This cash position will cover our runway at least through Q1 2019. Slide eight. I'm moving on to the key figures of the reporting period in comparison to the first half year and full year of 2017, respectively. The operating loss with -4.1 million euro is lower than in the same reporting period of last year due to the fact that we had no clinical trial in the first 6 months running. The result in the reporting period 4.1 million euros and slightly lower than the corresponding figure of the first 6 months of 2017, which is due to a one-time effect caused by the release of tax accruals in 2017. Equity stood at 4.8 million euro at the end of June, which translates into an equity ratio of 67.6%. On the balance sheet, we have 7.2 million euros. Cash flow from operating activities is 4.1 million euros, which is significantly less as compared to the same reporting period of last year, which translates into an average monthly operational cash flow of 628,000 euros. Cash flow from investing activities are 472,000 euros, and the cash position at the end of this reporting period is 6.7 million euros. Slide number nine. The number of employees remained by 14. The loss per share is 0.51 euro for the first half year, and the number of outstanding shares is 8,208,000. Slide 10. Some further information as to the period result and cash flow. The net loss of 4.1 million euro is in line with our projections and driven by R&D expenses of 2.6 million euros and G&A expense of 1.6 million euros. The positive cash flow from investing activities of 475,000 euros resulted from the expiration of a pension liability insurance. With this, I turn the call over to Inge.
Yeah, thank you very much, Uli. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to provide you with an update on our plans and the status thereof, and how our approach and the development strategy does compare to others, and an important part, how it fits within your regulatory guidance. So it's not just focused on the more recent findings or the activities in first half year 2018, but due to the fact that I wanted to take the opportunity to get a broader synopsis related to what is going on in the field, I thought it might be worth to put things into perspective and connect them. And that relates to our slide 11. That is just a high-level summary of what we have done so far. And you know, of course, in very detail, our very comprehensive phase one with younger and elder healthy volunteers, and the very important outcome which was instrumental for designing our first phase study, the phase 2A study. So you might recall, and that is really of utmost importance, that already our first phase 1 study in elderly, and elderly, that's the target population, gave us a very robust model of dose-dependent target occupancy. And you know that that is, of course, very important to design the dose dependency. And besides the PK and target occupancy, of course, the phase one tells us about the safety and tolerability, and within the SAD study, treating patients for 7 to 11 days, the safety tolerability, even at the highest dose of 3.6 grams, was well tolerated. So that was the basis for designing, as I indicated, the phase 2A. And that is, of course, the first time a new, unprecedented target evaluated in patients. So key primary endpoint was efficacy. But then we had a lot of tailored secondary and exploratory readouts, which would inform us, hopefully, about the potential, as it would get signals in the patients, and further on to show what would be the most relevant readout to include in a phase 2B. And the latter one is what I would love to get into a little further. Before I'm getting there, and Uli Dauer already mentioned that, one is always looking into our industry environment, and specifically though, what is going on in the Alzheimer field, and a lot has been published. And in slide 12, you see a summary which we feel is not only we, you can read that, that gives us reason for an optimism in regard to the position of A-beta in the pathology of Alzheimer's disease. I will get there again. Uli mentioned already two recent and even more recently results, late-stage results with aducanumab. And so what has been seen here is that there is a combination, not only a dose reduction in plaque, but also reduction in progression of clinical symptoms. So that is a very important milestone. And that was complemented more recently by the results shown with the BAN antibody, ICI Biogen, as we all know, which originally comes from BioArctic. And in their phase 2 trial, they also saw quite promising and quite solid reduction in the plaque load. They also provided us with information of changes in cognitive domain. But as you know, and if you follow that in the press, currently there is some caveat because the regulatory agencies focus them to include, not to include APOE carriers in the highest dose. And the result was that there is a certain bias if one compares the placebo. But they are about now to do a sub-analysis, and everybody is very interested to see whether that would give us additional learning. So what we can take here is, yes, there is, first of all, new promising results, and the overarching take-home message is, of course, targeting A-beta. And what type of A-beta? And that is also indicated in the next slide, slide 13. You have here, you see the description of starting point, monomeric A-beta, and then smaller aggregates called low molecular weight oligomers, and then they build up protofibrils, so there is a dynamic. And eventually these soluble aggregates end up in the fibrils. And what is seen here, based on literature, that both antibodies, the BAN and aducanumab, bind to soluble entities and to different size of entities, though. And BAN has been shown to also bind to fibrils. So that fits with what I just said, that the oligomers, obviously, are a key centerpiece. And it's only more recently, last few years, that people are focusing on the importance of the of oligomers of A-beta. And oligomers, A-beta oligomers and inhibitors of QC have very important connection, because QC is forming a modification of A-beta, pyroglu A-beta, which is an important seeding component of very synaptic and neurotoxic. So here we are. So the field is really focusing on oligomeric A-beta, and that nicely corresponds with the first data, which show not only an effect on kind of biomarker, but also on cognition. Nevertheless, what I did here in slide 14, and this is just a compilation of questions which has been asked for so many times and for so long, why so many failures in AD clinical development? And there are sub-questions which needs to be answered. How is that? Do we pursue a wrong target? Are there flaws in the concept? And here we would say that if you look into the late stage, that is base and antibodies, that is all based on the scientific knowledge of the late 90s. And science has created and discovered much more granulated information. Then you vividly recall, of course, in the beginning specifically of the antibody late stage studies, there was it's too late, that relates to, do we start too late to treat patients with the later stage of AD, and that was combined with too little, because you have to always recall that only 0.1 to 0.2% of the dose gets behind the blood-brain barrier. And it's important that the antibody binds to relevant A-beta entities and are not just neutralized by binding to benign A-betas, which do not have cause any harm. So these are topics of vivid discussion. And more recently, and that is interesting, another point towards that, more recently it was also coming from the agencies, are we too fast? We're rushing from preliminary mechanism of action data to phase 3. And another very prominent discussion point is, you know that, so what are the appropriate cognitive functional readouts related to the stages of the disease? And so that debate is ongoing. And last but not least, at a different level, of course, it's getting more in the focus also now in the Alzheimer's environment that one has to look early on into combinations to get a prominent effect. And that is interesting enough what Lilly is doing with their pyroglutamate beta antibody and the BACE inhibitor. So the conclusion is, from what I shared with you, that probiovirus bears the name A-beta, but we are dealing with a different and very specific approach. And I think that needs to be understood. And we are focusing A-beta oligomers and toxic oligomers. It's a kind of gain of toxic function. And on top of that, and that is what we got already from phase 2A, besides preclinical studies, that it has also impact on the third hallmark of the disease, and that is inflammation. So that is more the concept, and then we are pursuing an innovative and success-oriented, diligent and sound clinical strategy, and that is what I would like to summarize in the next couple of slides, just for the synopsis, that we are not having bits and pieces, but put the pieces together. So we ask, of course, what is the implication for us that the antibodies are promising, positive? You can take what you want, but I would say it's positive results. Yeah, there is with the best-in-class antibodies, 25% up to 40% reduction of progression, but it's probably not the end what can be achieved, and further large medical need is still there, because there are also limitations with the antibodies, and that is antibodies, depending on where they bind, induce their areas, microhemorrhages, vascular edema to different degrees, and you all know if people are talking about these areas, so there is still controversial discussion about the relevance of it. So there is also a lot of learning behind it, and that I think is important. And what is, I think, also necessary to indicate here that A-beta antibodies require repeatedly 2 to 4 weeks IV application, and they show efficacy only after a very high dose. And of course, one should factor in that has both an economical and a convenient burden. And that's something which contrasts with what our molecule, of course. And therefore, I would, in the slide 16, focus your attention on the second bullet point. So we are dealing with a small molecule, which is orally available, convenient to take twice daily, And we have, just to repeat that from the earlier slide, we have a very good, very excellent also PK/PD model, and we can tell what is the level of target occupancy. So we can really closely modify that. And the development program is, of course, tailored, the design of the studies to recent paradigms in AD. And these are indicated here, but I will get there in another slide. And but the important point is it's positive. The antibody brings A-beta back into play, and antibodies and the pyroglu formation via inhibition of QC, these are two complementary activities, because as I indicated here, if one combines pyroglu A-beta antibody with a QC inhibitor, you see additive effects. And that is something which is also, of course, an important finding. Next, slide 17, that is just the schematic presentation of our development steps, the lower part, and that compares with what has been done quite frequently in the Alzheimer's arena. We are going stepwise, as I just explained to you, and we will get to the phase 2B. But I think this is very instructive to see that if, and that happens in the past, you are doing phase 1B in patients, just looking to biomarkers, but then immediately step into confirmatory efficacy. And the question is, what is really there to be confirmed? So, and it's interesting that that aspect here, that this type of critique is getting louder and definitely had already an impact on regulatory agencies with their recommendation. And I will share with you that in one slide a little later. In 17, that is just an overview which I just showed, but focusing on what we are doing in our development strategy. So phase 1 and 2A, evaluating safety, of course, and then the very different exploratory questions like target engagement and the question which of the various readouts, meaning cognitive readouts or meaning pharmacodynamic readouts, are suitable for a phase 2B. And that is the biggest asset we got from our phase 2A study. And so that encouraged us to develop two studies as a program, proof of concept program. One should be performed in, will be performed in EU, and the other one in the US, but that is only of secondary interest. The studies have some elements in common, but they also have clear differences, so that we would, in the end of the day, can compare key components, but we will have a richer plate. I'll get there. In slide 19, that's just a reminder. We have seen that in press releases. We are running the two in EU. In EU, we will, of course, I'm very happy to have Philip Skelton, who was the principal investigator for the SAPPHIRE 1 study. He is very keen, together with the experts named here, to go forward with the European phase 2B study or proof of concept study. And I'm now referring to what Ulrich said during his introductory remarks, that we are happy to get Howard Feldman on board. And Howard Feldman, as the director of the ADCS, Alzheimer's Disease Corporate Study Group, and he has, and that is what I always wanted to indicate, it's not a CRO, it's an academic CRO, and with the mission, also mentioned by Uli, that he wants to bring new concepts to proof of concept, and here we fit. But we really had to go through the critical evaluation of 35 steering committee members who would eventually vote whether ADCS would take up the program or not. And it's there. That was at least a kind of external validation, not only of the concept, but also in regard to what we are going to do and what we are planning to do. Because you all know, if you are in contact with designs of clinical studies, there are very many options and very different strategies one can pursue. Next slide goes in a little bit more in detail. Maybe I will not indicate everything because you have the slide deck in front of you. And here are more content-related elements, what we got in phase 2A. So we have a clear, in terms of safety, we could say that the maximum tolerated dose in patients has been reached, which is, of course, an important information for the plan of phase 2B. That means we would have to modify the dose schedule, and that is what we are doing. If there are questions, I'm happy to answer that later on. And we, in terms of cognition, that is part of the cognitive test battery, the neuropsychological, that's nothing exotic, that's validated and approved by FDA. And what the other finding is, which would encourage us to tailor the phase 2B, is that we have seen that the EEG, the typical changes one sees in the EEG between healthy elderly and the early patients, that that could be influenced and pushed back to normal. And I think that's a very, very interesting pharmacodynamic marker. And so we have additional information pointing to the synaptic activity, improvement in synaptic activity, and inflammation. And in essence, what we can say is that all the different parameters which we have used, most of it, of course, exploratory, are pointing all towards the same direction, and the direction is supporting our concept of inhibiting QC and getting beneficial effects which you can capture at different levels. So that was what informed the design of phase 2B, and that has been structured in somewhat different way. We have the EU study, which is focusing on synaptic function mainly. The study would be somewhat earlier, and in the US study, I don't want to go through each line here, the US study is more comprehensive, and we foresee a longer treatment period. But that is exactly what we said. We will do it stepwise, not jumping from tiny little sapphire, which was very important to know, into a big study. And we got quite a lot of positive signals that that is probably the right way to do. In 21, you see only 2-3 parameters which are characteristic for the EU study compared to the US study, some key features. And you see that here it's a reflection that we are planning for success. Because if both studies are positive, that would allow us an upside to discuss conditional approval. Because you know that the agencies are clearly explained that option in their new draft or new guidelines. The next slide, 22, it's just at a high level so that you could get a glimpse what the difference is. I indicated already if one would start with the EU phase 2, so based on the experience with the neuropsychological test battery for cognition, we did a power analysis which came up to 250 patients, and a secondary endpoint, because we will have, of course, the EEG and the network, because we found that most promisingly affected in Sapphire 1. And we will further explore the biomarkers in the sense that they should give us a signal of efficacy and not diagnostic biomarkers, of course. And if one compares that with the US phase 2B study, you see immediately what pops up is longer. We have a higher number of patients, and that is related to the power analysis. If one would select the famous CDR sum of box as a primary endpoint, that is not 100% as I indicated. The US protocol is still under in planning, so let's see where we come up with, because it's so indecisive what type of endpoint one takes. That brings me to the next slide, because there is always a big discussion, and here is where the regulatory agencies come into play, because they have certain requests, and it was extremely helpful to see that the new regulatory frameworks in four early IDs specifically that was launched, the draft was published from the FDA in February, and it was also in February that the European agency, the EMEA, also launched a new update of their guidance for exactly the same patient population. And one can really learn, and what we have seen in the community is also as a burst of feedback in the blogs and the public domain, that was highly appreciated, because it stimulates the discussion between the agencies and the companies. Obviously that the agencies are also more and more under pressure if they are too strict. So there is something in motion here. Two things to indicate, so it's easier. Although we all know that Alzheimer's pathology is a kind of continuum, it nevertheless there is an agreement now for better practical handling that one has to have a classification of population in terms of staging. So that is also important that everybody, if it says A, it really means A. The EU study has similar guidance, I must say that. But before I go in here, I would switch immediately to the next slide, to 24, because I think that makes it pretty clear. What you see in the upper part, the red part here, that's a citation taken out of the EMA guidance. And you can see here that they really write down that in many cases, there is a lot of failure, but in many cases, exploratory trials did not provide, first of all, proof of concept to inform phase of 3. So they omitted it. And that's what they say. And they are really encouraging companies, exploratory trials, to perform before entering phase 3. And then they provided a list of exploratory studies, indicating what they understand, what should be in place. And there are all these different questions. I don't want to go through that table, but you can see by the tick list in that table that we have addressed it and the different questions, and we have a clear understanding of the results. And I have one caveat. If you go down to dose response, yes, we don't have a dose response, of course, in regard to efficacy. But what we have already dose response related is target occupancy. And that is helpful because that guides us which doses we should use. And then we have proof of concept, and that is what we are currently preparing. So I would say what we did is sitting 100% to what the agencies expect now. I was talking more about the EU study because she is planning a protocol and setup is somewhat more advanced. The protocol are completed, so I wanted to give you a kind of flavor where we are here during the last month. You know that setting up a study takes about 1 year before you can have the first patient, first visit. So there is very a lot of activities, and we started that. It took the advantage that the setup phase is not the most expensive part of the study. The expensive part comes later. And it comprises, of course, identifying sites and contracting sites and third-party CROs. Of course, preparing all the documents, because you need to get the regulatory agencies. And if we have 12 countries involved, so we would have to approach 12 different regulatory agencies. And that is, of course, what is the most important part during the preparation phase. 28, that is, I don't want to go into this slide in detail, because, as I mentioned before, the U.S. Phase 2 study, Phase 2B study, that's still work in progress. We have, I think, we have a frame there, but certain questions need to be sorted out. But what you can see here is what I mentioned already. We will have a seamless Phase 2 program. In a Phase A, we would work on the what would be the most the safe dose, and the second phase would then elaborate the efficacy. So that that is what we are currently doing with the U.S. And that is, of course, nice. Uli mentioned that also in his introduction. And he said in February this year, we have applied together with this group in the Howard Feldman to the NIH for an Alzheimer grant. And you might have seen that the U.S. is putting some additional money even into the development support of Alzheimer's activities. And we will get the final decision whether we would the funds would be awarded to us. It will be in October. But as informal information, we know where we are in terms of scoring, and I'm currently very optimistic that there is quite a decent likelihood that we would get the fund. And on top of that, of course, we should not forget that we are currently also preparing documents to open IND if you go to the U.S. And my last slide is 27, and I hope I captured here what I tried to deliver to you, that is named by the key word stepwise approach and program designed to the regulatory guidelines and with very clever input. And the next steps have been well prepared. And if you study, and both studies are standalone, by the studies, that's important to understand. And so it's again a kind of stepwise, and U.S. study would broaden the footprint. And I would skip 28 and would hand over to Uli again.
Thank you very much, Inge. Thank you. Thank you. May I get you to slide 29 with a corporate review? On April 23rd, my appointment as CEO, effectively May 1st, was announced, while my predecessor, Konrad Glund, retired effectively April 30th, and also CFO Henrik Liebers left the management board at the same time. I personally like to thank both also for their support in managing the transition in their respective consulting roles. I'm teaming up with our Chief Development Officer, Inge Luz, in the Executive Board of ProbioDrugs, and I'm excited to work with her in implementing and executing on our company's strategy going forward. For those of you who I'm new to, I'm a chemist by training and started my career in business development in a US-based medicinal chemistry service company back in 1993. Since then, I've held various management positions in European life science companies. The longest stint certainly was with 4SC, a German-based biotech company focused on autoimmune diseases and cancer, which I founded together with three colleagues back in 1997. I was their CEO from 1999 until 2013, which included an IPO in 2005 at the prime standard segment of Deutsche Börse. Afterwards, I had a couple of executive-level assignments in private biotech companies, among them Activero, a specialist company for aerosol-based inhalation technologies and therapies, for which I led the transaction team in the sale of Activero to Vectura, a British specialist pharma company listed on the London Stock Exchange. Light 30. On this slide and on the corporate side, we held our AGM on June 21st, where all resolutions proposed by executive and supervisory board were approved. This also included the re-election of the following members of the supervisory board: Dr. Erich Platzer, Charlotte Lohmann, Dr. Dinius von der Osten, and Dr. Jörg Nehrmann. Slide 32, and I'm coming to the outlook. The attractive lever for value inflection clearly is our lead candidate PQ912 with our plans for a phase 2B clinical development, as Inge explained. To be clear, the execution of this plan is contingent to additional financing or a partnership, both activities we are focusing on going forward. Against the background of the high medical need for a disease-modifying, affordable medication in Alzheimer's disease, we see PQ912 perfectly positioned as a potential first-in-class medication. With a robust preclinical and first encouraging clinical data for PQ912 in patients, we are optimistic and excited about the future of this program. An additional key asset in our pipeline is our pGlu-specific antibody, PBD-CO6, which we have implemented into our business development strategy with the goal to progress development of this exciting drug with a partnership. From a finance perspective, we expect a net loss in 2018, which, however, is projected to be lower than compared with 2017. Our current cash position will at least take us through Q1 2019. Slide 33, and this is actually the last slide of our presentation, with the financial calendar 2018, so the next reporting event will be our interim statements for the first 9 months of 2018 on November 29th. And with that, the call will be open for your questions. Operator? Operator, are you still with us?
Yes, of course. We can start the Q&A session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it is your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question is from Joseph Haddon, RX Securities. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. I have a couple. Can you perhaps give a cost estimate for the US study? You've said $25 million in the slides for the European one. And if you secure NIH funding, what proportion of the study does that fund? That's number one. And then I just wondered if you could comment on why the designs of the US and the EU are so are quite different. Why not take the approach of two similar design trials over 18 months with primary cognition function endpoints at the end and then have the secondaries with the working learning memory? Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Joseph, for your question. I wanted to start with the latter one. So you can do it, of course, but you can see the strengths and probably weaknesses of dividing it in two. But I wanted to stress that we don't want to make such a big leap. And I think that is something which would, in the end of the day, give us more information. And that was the topic of what I really wanted to get across. So with the European study, we have the neuropsychological test that we, based on historical data, we know exactly what the trajectory is, and from there we can calculate the expected effects. So that gives us already some confidence that with the 250 patients based on that trajectory that we could expect meaningful outcome even after at least 9 months of treatment. And that, I think, is the beauty of this part. And it compares, of course, with the U.S. First of all, it's the same patient population. We are including in both the EEG evaluation, which is, as you know, the EEG covers and captures the synaptic activity. And that makes it so exciting. If you work on, if you interfere with the impairment of synaptic activity, and that is then reflected in the EEG. So that is really convincing. And these elements we have, of course, included in both studies. So they are not completely different. Both can be used, and that is something which we have really discussed beforehand, that the different elements in the study would give good guidance and also convincing arguments when we start discussing with the agencies for a phase two or phase three. That would be my further explanation why we select the two studies, and the scope is somewhat different, but both are standalone studies, and you always have to have in mind we are always subject to funding, and that gives us also some flexibility. Your second question, Joseph, was regarding the U.S. study. I can share with you what one can expect if you get the funding, NIH funding awarded. That's up to $15 million. And it's hard to say because the final protocol is not yet there. But the protocol as such is very much depending on the size of the study, what primary readout you take. If you are going, and that's what I shared with the CDR sum of box, you need for a certain effect size 450 patients. Mm-hmm. And that would add another 40 million on top of what we can expect from NIH. It's a ballpark based on certain parameters which might be influenced still. So it's really ballpark.
Okay, and then perhaps just following up on that, the NIH funding, if secured, how does that play into that kind of figure?
You mean if that is secured? Can you repeat that? I'm not sure exactly what you mean.
I mean, what kind of, based on that kind of ballpark estimate, what kind of proportion of the U.S. phase 2B would that fund?
Yeah, so that is not the proportion, that is funding roughly $15 million.
Okay, sorry, didn't pick that up.
Yeah.
Okay, and then perhaps just one last one. Since the ban 2401, how are your partnering discussions going? And since the ban 2401 data, have you seen an uptick in interest in maybe the conversations you're having?
Would you take that, Uli?
Yeah, sure. I'm taking that question. What you're suggesting is absolutely right. So the discussions are more dynamic now because there are obviously new data points which are in the discussion and which are adding to the validity of the so-called A-beta hypothesis. Still, and you know that, there is still a lot of question marks around the meaning of the Ben 2401 data. So still the community is expecting new information, especially with respect to their kind of stratification issue. So to give a summary of what we sense is, excitement is certainly increasing, but still there are question marks. And, we see a lot of kind of changes in the landscape here of Alzheimer's disease, which prompts a lot of players to kind of observe what's going on and in which direction, obviously, the final data will prompt the community. We are in discussions, we again feel that they are getting kind of more intense with this data, but there's still a kind of wait and see tendency by a lot of players.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. Thanks, Uli. Thanks, Inga.
The next question is from Birgitte de Lima, Guts Partners. Your line is now open.
Hello, good afternoon. I have three for now. So the first one would be also on the two different studies. My way of interpreting the whole discussion around the different studies is a way to look at it as follows. If the phase 2B that is being done in Europe is positive, you could potentially start planning the phase 3 while you wait for the U.S. results without stopping, because you will have to do that anyway. And then in the phase 2B in the U.S. is positive, you can use that for conditional filing without having lost time to prepare the phase 3. So that's the first question, if it makes sense. And the second would be around the preparations of the European study. You've shown quite a lot of information where you are in terms of opening study centres and discussions with the CRO. And I'm just wondering, depending on how long it takes to get a partner, get the funding, is there a point in time where those activities would have to start from scratch if the funding doesn't come within a certain period of time, or can it just sort of stay in static state until you eventually secure the funding you need? And then the last question is more practical on the cash. Maybe I misunderstood something, but I think you said the cash runway is until Q1 next year, whereas the press release says the company's funded until Q3 19. So just wondering which one of the two is correct, or if there's a difference in the statements you made. Thank you.
Yeah, Inge, would you allow me to start with the last one, because I think this is can be clarified very easy. What I said was at least Q1, and so what we haven't worked out is what kind of activities we will still pursue in order to make sure we are ready for the start of the clinical trials, and therefore I was cautious in my statement. But runway until end of Q3 includes at least end of Q1. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
The two other questions you asked, Dilema, the first one, or the way you described it, I can just answer you are right. So the results of phase 2B would allow us to start interactions with the agencies already in regard to phase 3, and that can be then related into approval, conditional approval, if the U.S. study would also bring meaningful positive results. So that's what your understanding was, and you are right. In terms of your second question, yes, I share that, and I made that very important remark. You have the plan, that's the beginning of the setup phase, which I indicated to you, it takes a year, and some elements take longer, not that much in terms of budget, but time-wise, so you really have to orchestrate that things are pursued and nothing gets on a critical path. And so what we did, as indicated, we selected sites, we got feedback, what patients they could do, all the elements which are needed. The second big part is, of course, to put together all the documents, 12 different agencies. So you have to go to them, and normally it takes a while. You get Q&As, and that is all time-consuming, but not so much money-consuming. So and the idea is, if we run that in parallel, we have still then flexibility depending on the status of the financing, because it gets critical, of course, if you start recruiting patients. Then you have to have the money secured. Before, you have some flexibility when to start, but you have already all the preparation done. That would allow
Does it make sense, Dilema? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You're basically getting all your ducks in a row, and then you'll sort of have a point where you can wait until the financing kicks in, and then you can recruit the first patient, basically.
Yes.
I guess
yes.
That's what you're trying to do. Thank you very much. Very clear.
At the moment, there are no further questions. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. There's a follow-up question of Brigitte de Lima. Your line is now open.
Hi, so maybe just a couple of follow-up questions on P&L items. Looking at the R&D expenses, H1 didn't have any ongoing clinical trials other than the preparations, but the cost didn't go down very much compared to the second half last year. So I was wondering if there is any particular reason that the expense line didn't go down as much as it could have. And then on G&A, H1 looked a little bit high. I'm wondering if that has anything to do with the sort of redundancy, not the redundancy, but the packages that the departing management team received, and if we should see a small decline in H2.
Yeah, starting with your second question, you're absolutely right. So the slight increase in G&A is due to the changes in the management and the kind of packages that were agreed, and it's expected to slightly go down as you're suggesting. As far as the R&D expenses are concerned, you should know that we are still, having an active R&D organization and that we still are working preclinically to support, with preclinical data, the profile of PQ912 and also the antibody, within the R&D expenditures, also the dedicated personnel is being considered here.
Fantastic, very clear. Thank you.
Are your questions answered?
Yes, they are. Thanks.
Perfect. As there are no further questions, I would like to hand back to you.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining this call, and we certainly look forward to updating you again on either our next regular call or with substantial news in between. Again, thanks everybody for joining, and talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.